Did you know that at one time there was a big war going on in Norway where people would destroy one another's violins over whether or not they were writing more complicated folk music versus, well, more purist traditional folk music? That's one of the things you'll find out more about as we hear from two members of the Danish String Quartet as they talk about their new recording Last Leaf, which celebrates Nordic and other folk tunes. This is New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julia Macher. Enjoy. Would you please start by just telling me how you formed as a quartet? I know that your roots go way back, way before you were even teenagers.
Yeah, that's correct. We met very, very early and was very privileged in that way because it was a good start for us. We met in Askov, which is a school in Denmark in the countryside. And every year there's a summer camp there, 1 week in the summer. And we went there as teenagers, and the thing is that you play orchestra during the whole day. You have two orchestras, different orchestras that you play in, and then after dinner you just play chamber music all evening and night until you cannot stand anymore, and then you go and have beers after that. So that's just a music-loving camp for all amateurs, little kids up until 90-year-old people. So it's really a fantastic place. And we met there, just played a lot of music together. There's a little library, so we went there and, you know, picked our favorite string quartets. So we had like this whole pile of music, and then we were just sitting down and sight reading all the pieces that we have heard on CD at home or something like that. And yeah, it probably sounded terrible in the beginning. But anyway, we had a lot of fun doing it, and that was kind of the foundation. We built up a very strong friendship and good personal relations, so we were hanging out a lot, actually, after the summer camp. And after a couple of years, there was a teacher in Copenhagen, Tim Frederiksen, the professor of chamber music in Copenhagen. He kind of brought us to the attention of this being a string quartet is something you need to maybe take a little bit more seriously, and he, you know, saw some potential in our group. So he started teaching us. And for many years, he was teaching us a lot in his private apartment. He gave us music by Haydn and Shostakovich, and we had some very intense lessons, focusing very much on the core technique of playing string quartet together. And then we had our first concert in 2001, a concert that he made for us. And I think we found out that it was something special playing together, and playing string quartet was something that we all enjoyed very much. And yeah, since then it's just been going pretty fast, and now we've been together for, 16, 17 years.
So are you all four of you original members? I thought, as I was reading, it looked like maybe three of you were the original members.
That's correct, yeah. So the cellist joined us nearly 10 years ago in 2008.
How would you describe the mission of the Danish String Quartet?
Oh, that's a good question. We are quite easygoing types, actually. So we don't have big missions in life. we love what we do. We love the music that we get to play, and we're so privileged and lucky that we can actually make a living playing music that we love. And I mean, it sounds extremely simple, but I think that's the basic mission. Of course, there's a lot of extra things, like it's such a privilege to be able to share the Nordic music that we do. It's such a privilege every time we do a concert and we see young string players that in some way is inspired with the story that we have. I mean, but the basic mission is maybe a little bit selfish, you might say, that we just like to be with our good friends and play music and to share that with people. But that spins off lots of good things, apparently.
Now, what would you say sets you apart from other string quartets? If you were going to describe yourselves, perhaps that's a better way of asking that question.
I think actually maybe if there's anything that sets us apart, it's mostly in our story, because I think many chamber ensembles, they're often a product of something in music academy that you maybe people create a group to have a career, they do it kind of later in life. For us, the string quartet came before us actually deciding to become professional musicians. So it's so ingrained in our personal history as well that the way we learned individually to play our instruments was very kind of intertwined with creating the quartet. So the quartet became kind of a lifestyle for us from we were even before we were teenagers. So this that it's such a big part of our personal history, the personal friendships, the decision to become musicians, all of this kind of came after the quartet, and I think that maybe is a little bit unique. Whereas I guess normally people decide to become a classical musician and what career do I want? I like chamber music, then I make a quartet and then I have to. But for us, all of this came after the quartet, so I think this maybe puts things a little bit on upside down in a way.
I want to dive into your new recording. Well, how did you decide to put together this collection of Nordic folk tunes?
You know, the folk music is first of all, it's a tradition that is learned by playing together with other people. That means that, you know, you learn the music, you know, it's an oral tradition, you know, it's not so focused on like written down things. And I've been playing folk music for most part of my life, so I know a lot of Danish music, a lot of Danish tunes and Swedish and Norwegian music as well. Fredrik, our cellist, also listened a lot to folk music when he was younger. So we have like this, all of us actually loves this music, and there's a lot of great tunes that we thought that we could actually arrange and record. So it's actually a very fortunate situation. It's like as a string quartet, you have so much repertoire also in the classical music. So it's a very privileged situation. So with the folk music, we simply had to kind of figure out which tunes will sound best for a string quartet. And playing these tunes for a string quartet is, I mean, it's not done so often. And you really need to figure out what melodies has a strong character and maybe a strong story. And also, of course, you need to think about the whole CD from A to Z, what tunes will fit nicely together, trying to create like one story, one journey, one kind of arch of the whole CD. So there's a lot of different, you know, thoughts going into this process of choosing the material for a CD like this. And we made actually more arrangements than we could use, basically. So we actually discarded a few of them, because we didn't feel that they fit in or they were good enough, maybe. So now I think we found the 16 best tunes that we could from the Nordic countries.
It was the last track, now found as The Fairest of Roses, that inspired you to create this recording, right?
The story of that is actually that at one time, Ono, he was soloist in a Brahms double concerto for violin and cello, and as an encore. The concert was in Christmas time, so he did a little arrangement of a Danish Christmas tune that he did with the cellist. Our cellist, he's from Norway and was in the audience, and he loved that melody, and he was a little bit baffled because in Norway it's not a Christmas song, it's a funeral melody. It's something you sing at your funeral. So it was. He thought it was beautiful, but a slightly weird encore to do in that concert. But he was very fascinated with the melody, and then we started talking and we started kind of researching and realized that this thing that we in Denmark think is a Christmas tune, in most of Europe, it's connected to funeral and death. And we thought that was very weird. And then we realized that in Denmark, it's used as a Christmas song because there was a priest in the 18th century that wrote a lot of Christmas lyrics, and then he for this specific lyric, he put it on a funeral song with the message that even at Christmas is a happy time, we should not forget that it's still connected to the deeper things in life, something like that. But I mean, that's not so important. But what was interesting for us was that the same melody could be used for a funeral and for Christmas. And we felt that reflected a little bit what we are doing with this folk music, because essentially most of the Danish and Nordic folk music, it's melodies that are used to accompany dance. It's music with a very specific function. A fiddler sits in the corner and plays the same melodies for hours with the same beat, and people dance around. It's not supposed to be listened to on a concert stage. Then we take these melodies and we put them on the concert stage, essentially changing the function of the music. It's not just for dancing anymore. If it's a good melody, if it has the right kind of properties, then you can tweak it and use it in very different situations and get a lot of good things out of that kind of change of function. And in this way, we were inspired by this Christmas or funeral song, that the same music material can really have a lot of possibilities to go many different directions.
Let's talk about the title of this recording, because it's also based on one of the songs that appears on this release. It's not the title of that song, though. Tell me a little bit about the story behind Last Leaf.
The story is that we have a track on the recording that is called Drømte mig en drøm i nat, and that is the oldest known tune that we know of in Scandinavia, I believe. It's a melody that was written down in a set of laws written by the Danish king Valdemar the Victorious in the beginning of 13th century, and that was actually the first like real set of laws introduced to the Danish kingdom in that way. And on the last page, on the last leaf of this set of laws, there is a melody written down. It's very simply notated. It doesn't look like the notation we have today. So there's only four lines and basically some ink dots kind of marking where the notes are. Every Danish person knows this melody because it has been used by the Danish radio for many, many years as like a pause melody between shows. And it's a very, very beautiful melody. And the text for this melody is actually something about righteousness and that everybody should be treated fair and stuff like that. So it also has a quite beautiful message. So we just thought it was funny that you know, this story is quite interesting. And then there's also another thing to it, because the melody that Asbjørn was talking about before, the text that the Danish priest he made is called Den yndigste rose. In rose, that's a rose. So there's also like the you can see leaf both as a, you know, a leaf of parchment, but you can also see it as a, you know, something from the nature, like a leaf. So there's a little bit of a double meaning in that title.
Now, Rune, is this also where we hear you playing the Glockenspiel?
That is, yes. Yeah, that was my debut on the Glockenspiel, yes.
How do you feel like that fit into the piece?
Well, I thought we needed something different, like some different sounds on the album, and I mean, I thought it fitted nice because it's, you know, the percussive instruments are, you know, the first instruments that were probably made. So it has also this reference to something very early in music history. I don't know if they had Glockenspiels in 13th century, but I just like the sound.
Well, in addition to the Glockenspiel, you play the violin, harmonium, piano, and you've composed a piece that appears on this recording called Shine You No More. And it's, at least the feeling I had in listening to it, I just love the way that it continued to build.
Well, normally I'm kind of afraid of writing melodies. It's not my strong side. I've always wished that I played the piano because I just love harmony, and writing a good melody is, I find it really hard actually. That's also why I've been arranging a lot on already existing material. But then one day I listened to a piece by John Dowland, who was this fantastic Renaissance composer, English, but and he was actually the court composer for the Danish king Christian IV. So he lived in Denmark for a while, and in 1596 he wrote this song called Flow My Tears, which is such a beautiful song. And there's a harmonic progression in that song that inspired me a lot because I thought it sounded so nice. And I wanted to try to make something out of that. And then this melody just appeared. One of my friends always says that you don't actually write a melody, you find it because it's already there. It might sound a little bit familiar to people because there are many actually pop songs using that same chord progression. But I would argue that actually everybody is copying John Dowland from 1596, including me.
I wanted to talk about the Water Lily Waltz. It has such beautiful, lush textures. And it was written by a Norwegian fiddler. Would you talk a little bit more about that piece and where it gets its beauty from?
First of all, the story of the piece is that this is an example of composed folk music. So it's a waltz, but it is in five parts. And the fiddler that composed the melody, he was of the tradition that it was kind of fine to perform folk music as concert music. Other people, the purists in Norway, were very angry with this line of thought. And there was actually a big kind of war going on in Norway where they would destroy each other's violins because some fiddlers thought that the people that make this kind of complicated folk music were not being pure to the real tradition. But this is the concert waltz, you might say, and it's beautiful because it has so many layers, so many colors, but it's still connecting to the tradition. It's still traditional waltz. It was the cellist of the quartet that did the arrangement, and I think what he did very nicely is that he created much more texture than you often hear in these kind of arrangements. It starts just with two instruments, the violin and the cello, and they're kind of going along together, and then the cello gets out, then the viola joins the violin. The textures are changing all the time, and very rarely it's all four people playing together, and even when all of us are playing together, often the top three parts are playing identical lines, so it's actually just a cello and three fiddles together, and it's all the time changing from four people playing and then kind of morphing back and forth without you actually noticing. So I think our cellist did a very clever arrangement there, kind of using all these possibilities you have in a string quartet of separating and gathering the sounds.
How did you do that in the Shetland tune called Unst Boatsong? It had a very, almost like a looping effect sound in there.
This is a traditional song from the Shetland Islands, also very, very old. It's, you know, it's again an example of you have a melody that is very, very short. And basically what we have of the core material in the melodies are very, very simple. I think it's only like maybe 16 bars. And how to make like 16 bars interesting for 3-4 minutes in a concert? I mean, that's the question we're constantly asking ourselves. And there are, of course, many, many, many ways of looking at that. And one approach is to just simply just loop it and, you know, intensify, you know, colors and volume and, you know, how it's written.
But I think you can say that because we are active performers, we know what makes a string quartet sound good, sometimes even better than the composers. Sometimes we even help Beethoven to build some chords right. So we know exactly how to build up a chord so the quartet rings as if there was many more instruments. You know, if we play in tune and everything, there is some magic thing with the string quartet that if you play completely in tune and everything rings, it sounds like 200 strings at once. And because we have such a huge active experience, how to get this, and we learn so much from playing all these classical composers, we do know some tricks how to if we want to keep looping and keep building, we know how to do that.
Did you make any interesting discoveries as you were researching the pieces for this collection?
Oh yeah, a lot actually. We could have written almost a full book of liner notes. One thing that I thought was very fascinating is that Rune did an arrangement of a Faroese chant. Rune's half Faroese. It was a chant that he knows from the Faroe Islands, from his father up there. And he did a very nice arrangement, and we thought, perfect, that's fine. And then we started to research a little bit, and first we realized that it's not just fairies, it's all over Norway and Denmark in 1,000 different versions. And then we also learned that Beethoven actually did an arrangement of this tune in 1815. I remember the moment when I was sitting in Spotify, I think, and then I was just clicking, and then suddenly I heard a very weird Beethoven version of the same folk tune that we were doing. And we thought that was kind of mind-blowing that Beethoven had been doing the same basic project that we're doing now. That's just one example that I thought was very fascinating. Another one was we have the tune that's called The Dromer. We found that in an old tune collection from 755. 1755, made by two Danish fiddlers in Copenhagen, and we actually thought it had a different name because we knew it from some other friends. Then we found the original tune, and then it had this weird title, The Dromer, which is not even Danish. And we were like, what is a dromer? What is that in English? We thought maybe it was something with dreamer, and then we went there online. There are these kind of tune websites where you can plug in the music of a tune, and then it's a huge database and search tunes just all over the world. And then we put in this one, and then we found that it's a Scottish tune that is called The Drummer or The Piper o' Dundee if you're in Ireland.
A piper come to Urton, to Urton, to Urton. A piper come to Urton, and he played bonnily. And wasn't he a rogie, a rogie, a rogie?
This tune that is quite normal tune in Denmark, and everybody thinks it's a very Danish tune, it's also quite normal on the British Isles, and it's just kind of ended up in Denmark at some point. Every time we find out these things, it's very inspiring because at one level, folk music is a very local thing. It's the thing that you go to your local pub or inn or whatever and you play there. But it's also global. It's the same melodies that are flowing everywhere. And I think that's kind of mind-blowing when we're dealing with something that we think is so Danish and so local, and actually it's a beautiful thing that's kind of uniting music lovers all over and has been doing it for hundreds of years.
How do you get to the soul of these pieces?
I think it's, you listen to a melody and it might give you certain pictures in your head. It might also be something nostalgic. Maybe you just like it because you played it many years ago with some good friends or whatever. But all music creates some kind of images in your mind and your head. And then I think it's just about supporting that and trying to create an arrangement that somehow underlines the characteristics of that particular melody. And it's a super interesting process, actually, as an arranger, trying to find that soul. And sometimes it takes a while before you get it. Sometimes you need several attempts before the arrangement is spot on. There's, for instance, one piece on the recording called Erømmelse, which is a sonahoning, a traditional dance from an island in Denmark, and I was struggling so much with that arrangement, and I was struggling to figure out what the melody was trying to tell me. I knew it was great, but I felt that I couldn't help it, this melody, enough. So I tried all kinds of different versions until I remembered the old George Martin, Beatles producer. He said something about there's only space for two ideas in a piece of music. And so I tried to remember that in the arrangement, and then suddenly I found a way of, a way that actually worked.
Now, when we put on this recording, what are you hoping the listener will experience?
We hope that people will put on the recording and not experience 16 tracks of arrangements of string quartet playing folk music. We want it to be like a travel, and we wanted it to be a travel that is a very stimulating, very intuitive, but also interesting on a deeper level, so you can keep taking the travel, because essentially it's a travel of 1,000 years of musical history. But we see this as an album. We're getting older, so we still like recordings and albums and vinyls and CDs and stuff. So we see this as one connecting travel, not just tracks in a Spotify. And we planned this album as a connecting travel through a lot of different music of many different places and times. And we hope that's how it's going to be experienced.
That's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. Next time, Stephen Hoff joins us as he talks about the music of Debussy from his brand new recording. I'm Julia Mocker.